Cheers to the freaking weekend. I will drink to that. Thank goodness it's Friday because the wrestling pod is back. Yes, indeed. The little pod that could is back in the hood. WRSTLING, all of the graps without the E. You know the deal by now. Hugging the intro as always. My name is Liam. Patiently waiting as always. This man is Gareth.
Hello.
And you, my friends, have made your way onto the Inside the Ropes podcast network. Once again, thank you so much for giving us your time, your love, your downloads. We appreciate it all. And we've got a fun show for you this week. Never has a podcast been more polarizing than this one in the sense of its content. On one hand, we're looking at the brutal, hardcore, deathmatch laden Nick Gage Invitational, NGI 5. And on the other side, the light, the airy, the wonderfully spectacular Tokyo Yoshi Pro Wrestle Princess show. So let's just get straight into it. We're going off hardcore, NGI 5. Gareth, what did you think of this show?
Well, it's been a long, long time since I've watched a show comprised entirely of death matches, and it just reminded me that I don't think I have the stomach for it now.
Hold on a second. You are a horror film aficionado. What are you talking about?
I think nearly 3 hours of back-to-back death matches just seemed a tiny bit gratuitous for me now. Yeah. I'm not an edgy teen anymore.
I actually had to stop myself throwing up during the first match.
Oh no.
At which point I thought, oh no, I have aged and we're in trouble. We've got a whole show to get through. So just to give a bit of background on this one, this is a show produced by Game Changer Wrestling. So I think we talked about them previously, one of the bigger, possibly the biggest independent wrestling company in the US at the second. Putting on quite a lot of shows at the second, managing to keep things going throughout the pandemic, which is all very impressive. And of course, we're the brainchild behind The Collective, which we covered earlier in the series. Nick Gage, with whom the NGI is named after, is one badass individual. I believe he served time in the US, although I forget what for, but he's a hard, hard man. You don't want to mess with Nick Gage. Just by listening to him on commentary throughout this show, I was very clear that I don't ever want to mess with Nick Gage. I don't even want to talk about messing with Nick Gage. So I love Nick Gage. It's a great show. Thanks so much, Nick Gage. Don't kill me.
So I think we finally found the one wrestler that we won't disparage on the air. So Loki, Minoru Suzuki, no problem. Nick Gage, problem. No.
Yeah, big problem.
Yeah.
Travel ban or not, big problem. I don't want any part of that. This was a show, as Gareth said, that entirely comprised of death matches of varying types, supposedly. So, for example, in the opening round, we saw a swing for the fences death match with some quite inventive baseball bats with various appliances attached to them. It's pretty brutal. The bundles of barbed wire death match, a ladders and light tubes death match, a panes of glass death match. So you're kind of getting where we're coming from here. This wasn't a flashy wrestling fest by any stretch of the imagination. It was hardcore to the goddamn extreme.
For the most part, the stipulations felt quite interchangeable, like it didn't have a pronounced effect on the match.
Yeah, I kind of thought that too. I felt like, particularly the opening round matches, they were all kind of one note. There was a huge amount of fluorescent light bulb spots in there to the point where they basically became punches.
Yeah.
And kicks, you know, there was almost no gravitas to a light bulb being smashed on somebody's head, which, as I say, that sounds ridiculous, but you just became completely desensitized to it.
You can hit somebody so many times with light tubes and, you know, it does nothing to them. Who cares?
Yeah, it was a strange one. That said, there was some good stuff here, don't get me wrong. One of the matches that I thought really jumped out at me, and I don't know if you feel the same, Gareth, was the Shane Mercer Lucky 13 match. It was the one that was billed as a barbed wire death match, but actually there was quite a lot of wrestling here. Some interesting spots, some inventive spots, some high flying, and it kind of gave me a bit of a flashback to the Bloodsport event, where the match that spoke to me the most was the one that was the most pro wrestling, and that's probably the case again here.
Yeah, I would agree. My notes here were, it was some actual wrestling in this one. For my money, like that would draw me in more. It's doing some actual wrestling and working in the big deathmatch weapon spots around some actual wrestling is far more interesting than just work clumsily kind of moving between one light tube spot and putting somebody through a door. And
yeah,
like, I enjoy all those spots, don't get me wrong, like it's exciting, but it did feel like a lot of the time it just didn't really mean a whole heap.
Yeah, I think this is the thing, you know, you need that context for these matches, particularly if you're going to have them back to back to back to back to back. I mean, you and I have seen a couple of death matches live actually in Progress, and I also, just going back to the AEW one where it was Omega and John Moxley, you know, I'm not averse to a death match by any stretch of the imagination. I think, as you said here, it felt a little bit mindless. There wasn't really anything to get your teeth into other than the fact that, good Lord, these men can absorb a huge amount of pain and continue on like it's nothing. It's definitely to be applauded. I'm not sure that I necessarily saw the art in a lot of it. Maybe that's by design. And if I'm being brutally honest, towards the end of it, I was, dare I say it, a little bit bored.
One of the things that, for me, makes it tougher to watch isn't the sort of the violence, is because of the perceived and I'm sure very real damage some of these weapons are doing. You know, notably the panes of glass really stuck out to me.
Jesus, that was brutal.
You know, you're going through and you're just like, Jesus, you know, like, how could somebody kick out of that? You know, and then the finishes for a lot of them fell quite flat.
Yeah.
Just because the expectations are kind of so high. And they're doing stuff mid-match that is so crazy.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you've got matches just ending in a fairly mundane way.
Yeah, the finishes were the equivalent of a Buffy the Vampire Slayer big bad. You spend the whole season building them up and then she smashes them with a whole 20 minutes still to go at the end of the season. That was kind of my takeaway from this.
It was interesting sort of seeing some of the guys in here, like AJ Gray, who isn't traditionally like a deathmatch guy. It was nice seeing Masada again, who somebody, you know, I remember sort of seeing popped up in ROH in the sort of mid-2000s.
Yeah, was that the CZW war that they had?
Possibly, yeah. So I kind of have some like sort of fond memories of seeing him around in the mid-2000s.
Yeah,
and so
definitely.
It was like, oh, this is nice seeing him again. Mance Warner is very likable.
Mance Warner's brilliant. He's so charismatic. I absolutely love Mance Warner. But again, I didn't see anything from Mance Warner in this one. It almost felt like he just got beat up the entire time. And, you know, boy, can that guy bleed. And it's such a shame because in MLW, where he's often booked as a, you know, upper car babyface, he's so charismatic. He's so likable. And I really, really enjoy his matches. But although I got the, you know, good guy in peril bit here, maybe, I just didn't feel like he really got to show much of his stuff.
So obviously Mance made it to the final here against Masada. And I do think Masada already in an earlier match had suffered a nasty, really nasty cut and had to be kind of bandaged up mid-match. Masada elbows a light tube into the head of Mance towards the end of this match and gets another really nasty cut that he's just holding the whole rest of the match, which he obviously needs to finish the match and get out of there ASAP, because it's almost immediately he gets DDT'd on a board and pinned.
That's it.
Yeah, and it's game over. Like, Mance has basically almost had no offense in that match, just been bleeding profusely. Like, literally there's like a close-up on him and
you could see him
literally just his head pissing blood.
Oh god, it was terrible.
There was some blood pressure behind that spurting it out, like it was a little stream coming out of his head.
Jeepers.
Which, in all my kind of years of watching very bloody wrestling, I've never seen blood just pissing out of somebody's head like that.
The only time I remember it happening, and it really shouldn't have happened then, was the mass transit incident, you know, the whole thing with New Jack. The guy that he was against, quote unquote, he had the similar sort of projectile bleeding effect. But yeah, it was really tricky, this one. I was watching this one in the front room and my wife had a Nick Knowles DIY show on the TV, And I just kept looking up at the TV at the safety of this wonderful, happy, pleasant, no offense given DIY show and thinking, I'm not sure if I might rather be there at this point, to be honest with you.
I'm glad deathmatch wrestling exists, and I'm glad there's a space for it in the wrestling world. Yeah, I don't know if it's necessarily something I need to see a whole show dedicated to.
No, I totally agree. And, you know, jokes aside, incredible effort throughout here. You know, the sort of pain that these guys actually put themselves through is unthinkable, really. So hats off to them and more respect to them. And it hasn't toned down my love for a death match. And I'm actually really glad I watched this show, because I suppose part of this series really is to establish what you like and what you don't like in this whole wide world of wrestling that we have. And whilst I like a death match, it's very clear now that I don't want to see a whole show of them. Or if I do, it needs to be done in a very distinct way and not paint by numbers, weapons brawls, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. I love a well-worked death match on a card of otherwise sort of normal matches. It really stands out and, you know, gets you pumped. I think when everything's hardcore, nothing's hardcore.
Yeah, it is like that. It is like that. So, you know, overall, glad I watched it. It's probably not something I necessarily rush to again. But hey, if you're into that sort of thing, if you like the idea of something ultra-violent, this is going to be right up your street. There's going to be an awful lot for you here. So by all means, check it out. It's up on Fight TV at the second. May well move to IWTV in the future. But yeah, do check them out. Nick Gage and GCW.
So this was part of a GCW doubleheader that took place over the weekend. We also had another event called So Much Fun that took place the day after, which was broadcast on IWTV, which is up now to stream. And yeah, it looks to be a good show, utilizing a number of the same guys. GCW does seem to be a company that produce something for everybody.
Yes, definitely, definitely. And they're really majoring on that sense of variety, which I think is great. And it's the way to go for an independent wrestling company, because you're unconstrained, a bit like the wrestling podcast. You can go everywhere. So why not?
They're always interesting shows to watch, these GCW shows. My only criticism currently would be, you know, with cases of coronavirus surging in the US at the moment, we've seen other promotions like Black Label Pro have just cancelled or postponed Slammerton. It might be now's the time to sort of push pause on running live wrestling shows in the States again right now with audiences.
Yep, good point, well made. So I think that pretty much wraps us up for GCW. Not necessarily our cup of tea, but well worth drinking anyway, just to find out if you like it. We move.
And we're back. And in this segment of the show, we're going to be talking about Tokyo Joshi Pro's Wrestle Princess show. A little bit of background on Tokyo Joshi Pro. So they're all women's sister promotion to DDT, coming under the Cyber Fight banner along with DDT, Noah and Ganbare Wrestling, founded in 2012. So some of their notable alumni have been Candice LeRae, Thunder Rosa, and a number of the roster have competed on AEW, arguably the number two Joshi promotion in Japan, behind Stardom. But I do think they bring quite different things to the table.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, I would go back to the President Takagi interview, which we got over on ITRWrestling.com, where he does draw a distinction between what he describes as idol-led wrestling, which is Tokyo Joshi Pro, more wrestlers coming across from the idol culture, which I definitely think you can see, particularly on the show we're about to talk about, whereas Stardom is perhaps a more traditional Joshi promotion. Is that fair?
Yeah, that seems to be the vibe that I get. You know, I'm not familiar enough with the history of Joshi to sort of say.
Yeah, that's fair.
As a modern, newer viewer to the... They do seem like apples and oranges.
Yeah.
So what did you think of the show then, Liam?
I hated it.
I'd have to disown you if that were the truth.
Oh, God, I love this show. This show is great. It absolutely flew by. You know, it was a good 4 hours on the clock, and my word, did it just breeze past. I thought this was a wonderful show from start to finish, and particularly when you bear in mind that going in, I don't know about yourself, but I wasn't that familiar with the bulk of the roster, maybe 2 to 3 people I'd had exposure to prior to this. But still, it was a very easy watch. It just flowed. It was vibrant. It was interesting. And as a card, there was an awful lot on display here. You know, there was a lot of variety. So yeah, I absolutely love this show.
Yeah, a lot of really interesting personalities on display, I thought. None of the matches felt like they outstayed their welcome.
No.
You know, it was more that I wish some stuff could have gone longer than anything. You know, and that's saying something on a sort of 4-hour-ish card.
Yep, agreed.
Left me wanting more. Left me wanting to see a lot of these personalities again. Excited to see, again, to see the next show from this promotion.
Yeah, and I think, going back to what we were saying before, where this is perhaps more idol-centric, or the talent base is more idol-centric, what you do get then, or certainly you did get on this show, is a very upbeat, lively feel. And the characters and the audience participation and all that sort of stuff, that really does kind of jump through the screen, because these are performers, you know, performers first, perhaps wrestlers second in some cases. So I think that's one of the things that made this a very easy watch, because I've watched shows where you don't know the people on them and it's just sort of wrestling, you know, you don't have that investment. Whereas this really didn't feel like this. I got drawn in, I got attached to different characters. Yeah.
A lot of very enjoyable stuff here. I liked that the variety on here as well.
Mm-hmm.
In comparison to the Deathmatch show, you know, this was a show where it felt like there was a lot of different things on display here.
Yeah, it did, yeah, definitely.
Even down to the show opening with two songs.
Something totally different, but relevant and specific to the culture.
Any matches that really spoke to you here?
Yeah, I think, yeah, in a similar vein to what we've been talking about over the last couple of weeks, certainly the top three matches on the card all really delivered. I actually thoroughly enjoyed the Tokyo International Princess Championship Tournament semi-finals, of which we got two matches and then the finals on this card. So I thought all three matches were really great. Hikari Noah defeated Mirai Mayumi. Apologies if I'm absolutely slaughtering that. And Yuki Kamifuku defeated Shoko Nakajima, who's one of the talents that had been on AEW previously, as Gareth alluded to. Those matches were great. I'm a particular fan of Shoko Nakajima anyway. I think she's so fluid in the ring and is really interesting to watch. But she actually lost. And I thought Kamifuku, who comes out to this crazy techno version of Old MacDonald Has a Farm. Wonderful. It tripped me out, basically. I thought she was really interesting. And the final, which was Kamifuku against Hikari Noah, was a really solid match. Really enjoyed that. Good back and forth contest. And judging from the reaction from the audience, which again, as is the case in a lot of these Japanese shows, are present and allowed to clap, but encouraged not to chant or anything like that. There was a bit of a sound of surprise. So I think perhaps she was a bit of an underdog going in. I really like the fact that she uses the Famaster as a finisher. I've always been a big fan of that move, and I think it deserves its spot as a match ender.
Especially using a diving one off the rope.
Hell yeah.
So I thought Nakajima is one of my favourite people. You know, beyond just being a very gifted wrestler, I just think she has one of the best looks in wrestling.
Yeah, agreed.
I really enjoy her gear. So I don't know if you remember back to your interview with President Takagi, but it's Hikari Noah that wants to run him over.
Oh, of course it is. Oh, God. Okay.
So I thought he was a brave man appearing on this show, knowing she was in the building.
That he gives zero dams, that guy. Yeah.
But speaking of President Takagi, another instance where we really have to give a special praise and thanks and shout out to DDT English Update Twitter account for translating here. We had a switching random rules match on this card, which really broke things up again. You know, something completely different. There was a button attached to one of the one of the posts that the competitors could press, and it would change the rules, and the new rule, which had been submitted by fans, would appear on the Tron.
This was so good. And actually, interestingly, it featured Saki Akai from DDT as well against Hyper Masao, who I believe is some sort of superhero.
So yeah, this is just fantastic. I really enjoyed the silliness here, and couldn't have fully understood any of what was going on, I don't think, without some assistance here. But one of the stipulations, first of all, was no kicks.
And it got crazier from there.
Yeah, it got crazier from there. And then
there was a match where there was one where they had to spin around several times. Oh, like, yeah, they had to stick on their chin or something.
They had to spin five times with their head on a baseball bat.
That's it.
And then if they made a cover but were unsuccessful, they had to spin again.
And then one of them were, it was Anywhere Falls, but you have to eat a whole bag of like chocolate cream donuts or something first.
For your falls to count. It was just all very, very silly. And then it came to another one was each wrestler got some assistance. So President Takagi came out to help.
I love it when he makes his entrance where you got the Stone Cold glass smashing.
It's so silly.
It's so great.
And I think the DDT English update also tweeted about how he loves to milk his entrances at the big shows like this. So it might be a while.
He's a proper character, that guy.
So I've got a lot of love for him. So he came out with his great entrance to assist Super Mazao here.
Don't downgrade her.
Came out to assist Hyper Mazao. Whereas Saki Akai had Yukio Sakaguchi come out to assist her. So saw those guys mix it up for a little bit.
Yeah, good fun. I mean, this match was the wrestling equivalent of a slice of dragon fruit in the sense it was a real palate cleanser right in the middle of the show and really set you up in a nice way for the final four matches.
Yeah, I do think that's something that we saw both on this card and last week when we were talking about Ultimate Party, is that I felt that both cards were really well formatted.
Yeah.
Like, had a really good flow, had that kind of natural, this is the match that's going to lead into intermission, and then a good match coming back from intermission, and it was just really easy and downhill from there.
Yeah, and it's interesting because they both had a sort of quote-unquote comedy match as their midway point, which I wouldn't necessarily have thought to do. I would always consider a comedy match to be perhaps an opening card match, but actually it works perfectly in this position for that very reason. It just gives you something completely different, takes you away from the action a little bit, so you're ready to appreciate it again when it comes back. I think it's a really smart move.
Yeah, you know, because I do think it's very easy to get burnt out if you're on the edge of your seat too much or too invested and sort of, there's such a thing as too much good wrestling.
There is. Yeah, absolutely. I suppose we should talk about our friend Ito-chan.
Yeah.
Who competed, but oh gosh, I'm so sad. I think we're a curse. Are we a curse?
First, apparently so.
Takesta-san appears on your podcast and then he gets beat. And Ito-chan appears on the podcast and she gets beat. I'm not inviting anybody on that I actually want to win going forward.
Yeah, don't talk to us if you've got a big match coming up.
Yeah, don't do it. No. But she was in her tag match against Aja Kong and Mayu Yamashita. She was teaming against the WWE-bound Sari, and I think you could certainly see why they would be interested in her. She looked fantastic in this match, but I thought Ito in particular really stood out. It felt like the story was kind of about her, really, and her trying to show these guys, and particularly Yamashita, that she can compete and that she is a threat.
Throughout the match, you kind of see that she's not really that fussed about Aja Kong. She just wants to beat Yamashita.
Yep, and she's headbutting all over the place. And I thought it just generally gave a very good account of herself. She's so entertaining, so unique.
She's a really magnetic personality. It's yeah. Very, you know, I think from the second that she comes out, she's someone you're very drawn to. You know, coming out singing her theme song and, yeah, just being... She's just a bundle of energy.
Yeah, I actually found myself kind of picking her out even with the show closing segment where they had all the wrestlers in the ring, kind of a bit of a curtain call, if you like. I managed to pick her out and she's still doing interesting things.
Yeah.
She's interacting with people in unique ways and she's just got a real presence about her.
Yeah, I saw her at the end interacting with the new International Princess champion and it did make me think, oh, is that on the horizon?
Sounds good to me.
But yeah, that was something I picked out during that sort of closing. It might just be that they're friends and were having a good time out there interacting, yeah. Or it could be signalling something to come. Either way.
Absolutely. I love the tag team championship match on this one as well. I thought this, again, I think it was, we hadn't had a tag team match on the show since the first two matches, so there was a good amount of time in between. And this one was really different. Like, there was some real length to it, big stakes. I thought in particular, what was outgoing champions, Mayu Watanabe, really stood out. I don't know if you thought that as well, Gaz. She was just an absolute powerhouse and one of these people that you get in sport that don't necessarily look like they're, you know, they're not jacked to the gills or what have you, but good Lord, she was strong. She slammed both of her opponents at the same time. At one point, she pulled off an incredible giant swing, which I think went to something like 20 rotations or something silly. She was just fantastic. I walked away thinking, wow, this is somebody I need to go and see more of.
Absolutely. Somebody to watch going forward, I think. I'm guessing now that the titles have changed hands, possibly a singles run in the works for her.
Yeah, could well be. So she was with her tag team partner, Rika Tatsumi. They dropped the belts to the Bakuretsu sisters, which is Nodoka Tenma and Yuki Aino. And interestingly, and again, this is another tidbit from the DDT English Update Twitter account. That's at DDTPro_ENG. No worries.
We've earned our stickers.
supposedly, Yuki Aino used to be a ring announcer for Tokyo Yoshi Pro, but couldn't quite give up on her dream of being a pro wrestler, retrained, and here she is winning the belt, and she actually got the decisive pinfall as well.
What a nice story.
Lovely story.
Like, I think if you're somebody that's invested in Tokyo Yoshi Pro and has been following that whole thing, this would probably be a huge moment for you.
Yeah, agreed.
Seeing that story pay off, yep. Effectively.
Definitely. And speaking of stories, main event time. We've got the Princess of Princess Championship match, which is Yuka Sakazaki, the current champion and somebody that has been seen on AEW programming, albeit briefly, defending against Mizuki. And this match, I thought, was absolutely brilliant.
What a match. By far the longest match on the show, and for good reason. I think this goes nearly 10 minutes longer than the next longest match on this whole show. Mm. But it felt like it needed every second of those 25 minutes to tell the brilliant story that it did.
Yeah. So as I understand it, these guys are tag team partners normally.
Yes, the Magical Sugar Rabbits.
That's the one. Absolutely. And you could really feel the emotion of the story throughout the whole thing. You know, during the entrances, really nice touch, actually. Mizuki, the challenger, comes out first. When Yuka comes out to what is quite a distinctive theme song, the camera shows Mizuki like covering her ears. You know, she's trying not to get invested in any of it. Clearly, she's trying to stay in a particular mind frame. And, you know, they're all, the pair of them are both welling up for the entire opening segment of the match. It feels very emotional. It's a lot of tension to it.
Obviously, a lot of love between the two competitors. And I think the vibe is that they're two people that have a lot of love for each other. And because of that, they want to give the best of themselves in this match for the other one.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not about being the best for themselves. It's more about being the best for someone they care about.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
They're both trying to be at the top of their game, giving absolutely everything they've got. You know, there were some absolutely incredible moves in this match. Mizuki gave me a little bit of a Riho vibe.
Yeah, same. Absolutely, yeah.
Boy, does she have some great double stomps.
Jeez, yeah, does she ever. And I love that, what's her finisher called? Is it the Candy Whirl?
Yes.
Such a cool looking move. Really, really cool. Just actually, overall, as a match, the thing that really struck me about this, apart from the emotion, which was kind of the overlay of the whole thing, but beneath that, you saw so many different styles here. You know, for a while, they were grappling on the floor and almost submission grappling. Then there were a lot of high spots. Then it became slightly more dangerous. They were doing a lot of things in the corner. And then it became a bit of a strike fest at one point as well. Like, it really did shift through the different gears of pro wrestling with, you know, two people that clearly know each other very well, trying to outfight each other and find the silver bullet, as it were.
Absolutely. One of the other things that I found so impressive here is just how comfortable Yuka is on that top rope. Well, not even on the top rope, but not even in the corner.
I know. It's crazy, isn't it? Yes. Yeah, she's got incredible balance.
Just climbs the ropes right in the middle like it's nothing.
And just, yeah, she doesn't even immediately go once she's at the top, does she? She has a beat, basically, yeah. To take it all in. This is such a good match. So, so good.
This will be a move that I will try and repost the gif of, but she hits just an absolutely incredible top rope, middle of the top rope, 450 splash.
Yeah.
Which just is bonkers.
And it looks so hard to do because it's not like she's springboarding, so she doesn't have that immediate elevation or torque behind it. It's a gradual climb up the three ropes, pause on the top rope, and then go. You know, the balance and the poise is just astonishing here.
I really hope once Travel is back to somewhat normal that we see a lot more of her in AEW.
Yeah.
Just off the back of this, I was blown away. I'd enjoyed her very much in the appearances I'd seen her in AEW, but she was given maybe like 5 minutes here or there. You know, that's nothing compared to a 25-minute absolute barn burner of a match.
Well, if you're anything like me, you're still wondering why Riho shoved her down at Fyter Fest. You know, that's a hanging thread that I want explained. But anyway, mustn't go too far into the E because we're here in TJPW. It's a beautiful thing. What a great show. And I'm absolutely desperate to watch some more now. So mission accomplished on their front.
That's really been the thread running through a lot of the cyber fight promotions that we've been watching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I've definitely found watching some TJPW here has just left me champing at the bit to see more now.
Yeah,
same with DDT. Everything we've watched from them has made me really determined to go out and watch them on the regular, to the point where DDT now I make sure I kind of keep an eye on the show calendar, and if I'm able to, I make sure I'm up and watching it live
and live tweeting from the Wrestling Pod Twitter account.
Sometimes. If I make it up. I'm not a morning person, but I will drag my ass out of bed at, you know, 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning after sort of four hours sleep to watch if I can.
No, same.
Stray thoughts before we head to the news.
Do it.
May Segura making her debut for TJPW in the opening match.
Oh, was that her debut?
Yeah.
Interesting. So this is May Segura of Choco Pro fame.
And she travelled to the show on a bike, apparently, which I think is adorable.
Well, like a push bike?
Yeah.
Do you know, I was immediately drawn to her. She's got incredible charisma, hasn't she?
Yeah, she really does. That really comes across to me in like all the Choco Pro shows I've watched. That's really come across, like just how, again, like we were saying, Ito-chan is just so magnetic. I find May to be very magnetic as well.
Agreed.
It felt really weird seeing her in an actual ring. I've only ever seen her wrestling on the mats at Choco Pro. I love that she makes use of the kettle mutilation, which apparently she calls the apple mutilation.
Yeah, no, I thought she was really great. She was kind of the highlight of that match for me.
Really hope that she gets to become a Tokyo Joshi Pro regular.
So really good stuff. Really glad I watched this show. Love this show. Looking forward to seeing more.
And we're back with the news. There's, again, lots to talk about this week. We're going straight over to Japan for New Japan Pro Wrestling. I'll chuck that over to you, Liam.
Yep, so plenty of going on over in New Japan. Best of Super Junior 27 lineups have been announced. They're available online. But what is noteworthy, or particularly noteworthy, is the main event of night one is going to be the ticking time bomb Hiromu Takahashi against Taiji Ishimori in a match that could quite conceivably actually be the tournament's final. So that one will be very good indeed. Looking forward to that. Over in the US, as we told you last week, the Super J Cup is also going to be running. That kicks off the night after the Best of the Super Juniors finishes. First round matches have been announced. They are Clark Connors versus Impact Wrestling's Chris Bay, ACH versus TJP, Ray Horace versus Blake Christian, and El Fantasmo versus Leo Rush. All good stuff indeed.
Elsewhere, the World Tag League participating teams have been announced as well. So, you know, hold on to your butts. It's exciting as usual.
Oh, gosh.
So we've got last year's winners back again. Finn Juice Robinson and David Finlay.
I like them as a team. I really struggle with the name. I don't know why. It just, the name makes me feel a bit weird.
It's pretty uninspiring, isn't it? We've got Taichi and Zack Sabre Jr., the current tag team champions. Gorillas of Destiny, the perennial winners of this tournament. Tama Tonga and Tonga Loa.
That's pretty cool. Good to see those guys back over there.
Definitely good to see them back working out in Japan. Hiroshi Tanahashi and Toa Hanare. Yoshihashi and Hiroki Goto. We've also got another Chaos team in Toru Yano and Tomohiro Ishii, which I think will be a really interesting team just for the dynamic between the two participants. You've obviously got the very stern Ishii and the ridiculous Toru Yano. From LIJ, we've got Shingo Takagi, the new never open weight champion, teaming with Sanada. We also have Evil and Yujiro Takahashi. And then another Bullet Club team, Bad Luck Fale and Chase Owens.
Oh, okay. All right, interesting.
And then the final team is going to be Great O'Khan and a mystery partner.
Ooh.
So is this going to be somebody new, or is it going to be somebody joining Empire? Any guesses?
You kind of want somebody that's either on excursion or due on excursion, really, don't you? Yeah, no, nobody springs to mind outside of that.
Speaking of people on excursion in the UK, I do really feel for poor old Shooter during this time. Old Shota Umino is potentially, I don't know if he's still in the UK, just hanging out, not being able to wrestle, because he was booked on an Attack show in Cardiff that I had tickets for, but decided not to go to the weekend before lockdown started.
Okay, interesting.
So I'm curious, you know, is he still out here? Is he back in Japan?
Shota, get in touch. Let us know.
Hope you're well wherever you are, Shooter.
We do indeed. We do. Okay, sticking with Japan, just a quick tidbit that over in All Japan Pro Wrestling on December 13th, they're going to be graced by the presence of none other than Shima, the popular journeyman wrestler who's featured recently over in DDT. He's here, he's there, he's everywhere, he's Super Shima, and he's in All Japan on December 13th. And more power to him, I do love that man.
Back to the US. I mentioned earlier, but Black Label Pro have taken the very difficult decision to postpone Slammerton, which was due to take place very soon, citing pandemic concerns for the postponement, which makes a lot of sense. The numbers in America are outrageous at the moment. Like I mentioned as well, with the GCW shows going ahead, it might be wise for promotions running with crowds to take a little break just for the time being until things are back in hand. So really do commend Black Label Pro for making this very difficult but ultimately correct decision.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. South of the border in Mexico, AAA star El Hijo del Vikingo had been rumoured to be taking a year-long break, which I suppose, given the circumstances, was not a bad shout. But it has come out that he is indeed coming back to AAA, who have been running the very successful Auto Lucha shows. He's been shown practicing some moves at the AAA training location, so looks like he's going to be back when they next run.
In Impact, there's lots happening there. We found out that the Rascals are going to be setting sail and leaving Impact Wrestling.
They'll be sailing out of the wrestling podcast universe.
It's true.
We'll no longer be able to talk about them.
There's talk that they're possibly heading to WWE, but that's unconfirmed. Their time is up in Impact anyway.
I suppose, to be fair, you know, they've probably done all they can there, you know, short of breaking up and going after singles titles. They've been tag team champions plenty. I think they've each been X Division champion at one stage or another. So maybe it is the right time to move on.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. The card has been finalized for Turning Point, which is taking place this weekend. Just announced are Jordan Grace and Tennille Dashwood teaming to take on Rosemary and Taya Valkyrie. Chris Sabin and James Storm teaming to take on XXL. And X Division champ Rohit Raju is running the Defeat Rohit Challenge. That joins the already announced Rich Swann, who's the world champion, taking on Sami Callihan. Knockouts champion Su Young defending against Deonna Purrazzo in a no DQ match. The tag team champions The North taking on the Good Brothers. Brian Myers versus Swoggle, Moose versus Willie Mack, Eddie Edwards versus Daivari. So yeah, I think it actually sounds like a very promising card.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
Maybe two matches there I can live without seeing, but I think it stands a very good chance of actually being a better overall show than Bound for Glory.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the things that dragged that down are likely not going to occur here, and hopefully they've learned from their production errors, but time will tell.
Yeah, and just as you were running through that card, I was kind of thinking, oh, that sounds decent. I'm going to have to find some time in my diary to fit that one in. But yeah, good stuff. Looking forward to that. Another US promotion that is coming back to the TV screens is that of Major League Wrestling, MLW, of which I am a big fan indeed. They're back next week on November 18th. Two matches announced for the first show back, and they're two big, big matches as it happens. So Brian Pillman will be challenging Myron Reed for the middleweight belt, and Davey Boy Smith Jr. will be challenging Jacob Fatu for MLW's World Heavyweight title. So two very interesting title matches to kick things off. Really interesting to see How MLW are going to play that? Do you use this as an opportunity to completely reset two new champs? Or do the stories go elsewhere? I do like the way MLW tends to run their storylines. So, yeah, really excited to see them back.
I'm looking forward to dipping into MLW upon their restart. Mm. I never watched any whilst pre-pandemic. I've watched some old episodes of Fusion on YouTube during lockdown. So, yeah, I'm keen to kind of see it back as a week-to-week show.
Yeah, and they've assembled one hell of a roster as well. You know, they already had a good roster, but they've added to it during the last couple of months. But, you know, this show really does highlight some of the exciting homegrown talent they have. Myron Reed is somebody I'm really hot on. He's fantastic in the ring, and he does the whole chest protector gimmick as well, which I adore from D'Lo Brown. And it did get me thinking, actually, just on a brief WWE-related note, why that was never really kind of highlighted with Roman Reigns, because he always had the chest protector as well. What the hell's going on? And Jacob Fatu, of course, as well, is fantastic. So, yeah, should be a good show.
Yeah, lots to be excited about there.
Indeed. So I think that is it for the news and perhaps, indeed, this here episode. So what have we got on tap for next week? Well, we're heading back over to Japan and back to Wandering Stardom as they present their Sendai Cinderella show. This looks like a stacked card from top to bottom. A couple of matches just to whet your appetite. Mayu Iwatani versus Utami Hayashishita. That one should be absolutely insane. We've also got Bea Priestley against Shuri and Julia versus Konami. Good lord, this is a good looking card, actually. This is going to be something special. Really looking forward to covering that one. In addition, we also have an interview. So, much like we give a huge amount of praise to the DDT English Update account for all its efforts in unlocking the world of DDT and Tokyo Joshi Pro Wrestling to Western fans, of similar stature is the Pro Wrestling Noah ENG account, which is run by Hisame. She will be joining us next week to discuss all things Pro Wrestling Noah, particularly as we gear up for their big 20th anniversary show, Noah the Chronicle Volume 4, which we will be reviewing on the podcast the following week. So if you've ever been intrigued by Pro Wrestling Noah, or if you're a super fan and you want to hear what an expert has to say, join us for that one. Really looking forward to getting under the skin of the green brand.
We're in danger of veering into being a Joshi podcast, but we have... both of us have fallen a little bit in love with both Tokyo Joshi Pro and Stardom.
Big time. Yeah, I think this is the wonderful thing about doing this podcast, because we can kind of go everywhere, see lots of different things. And yeah, I've really stumbled across something that clicks with me in Joshi wrestling. Really good stuff.
One last thing before we get out of here. I can't help but recommend the excellent I Quit tag team match from this week's Choco Pro, which saw Lulu Pencil and Emi Sakura, the Pencil Army, taking on Yuna Mizumori and Chris Brooks, Tropical Calamari, which ran the entire length of the show and was really emotional and a great match. A little bit unusual if you're not used to seeing no ring wrestling, but give it a go. I promise you'll enjoy.
Yep, absolutely. I believe that one is, in fact, up on our Twitter account, so do check it out. Speaking of the Twitter account, you can follow us at Wrestling Pod, that's wrestling without the E, on both Twitter and Instagram. And hey, why not even send us an email? We're at wrestlingpod, again without the E, at gmail.com. Other than that, we're on itrwrestling.com, and do consider giving the Inside the Ropes social media feeds a follow as well. And of course, how could I forget, insidetheropesmagazine.com. Do check out the hard copy magazine for all the wrestling news that you know and love. And I think that pretty much wraps us up for this week. Thanks so much for joining us once again. We really do appreciate you guys coming on this journey with us. All your comments, all your thoughts on social media are truly appreciated. So thank you very much. But until next time, there's only one thing to say, which is stay safe, stay happy, and enjoy the graps.